Welcome to the Infernal Brains Podcast, a joint venture between TarsTarkus.net and 40K. I'm Tars from TarsTarkus.net.
And I'm Todd Statman from Die Danger, Die Die Kill, a.k.a. 40K.
Infernal Brains is the only podcast that takes three episodes to come up with a title. Mm-hmm. On today's show, we'll be discussing Polly Shane Kwan Ling Feng, a famous martial arts actress who made many fine films. Polly Shane Kwan first came to fame in King Hu's 1966 film Dragon Gate Inn, where she played a female sword master in disguise as a male, which became sort of a motif for her. She is also famous for the 18 Bronzemen films, another film where she was disguised as a male. In her early films, such as Grand Passion or Bravest Revenge, she normally was a daughter of a murdered father who set out to avenge her father's death. Her father's died all the time, and probably the hillsides of Taiwan are still littered with the dead bodies of her fathers. After she started her career in acting, according to the biographies online, which we know are incredibly accurate, they say she learned martial arts, including Taekwondo, Judo, and Karate.
Yeah, all the things I saw said that she had actually it's just basically the same bio reprinted on a bunch of different sites, which said she had a black belt in Judo, Karate, and Taekwondo, which for some reason, I mean, she's definitely got skills, but that there's something about that that sounds like that might not actually be accurate.
None of those are actual Chinese martial arts.
That should be noted.
It's hard to find any other biographical information about her online in English. The book, The Essential Guide to Deadly China Dolls, which was made pre the internet, stated that at one point she married an officer in the military, and eventually they got divorced, and then she married a Chinese businessman, I believe. But another biography I found says she now operates a restaurant in L.A.
I heard somewhere that she is living in California now, too. I can't remember where I heard that. It may have been in that, because she also turns up in that documentary film, Deadly China Dolls. Or is that the name of that one? Have you ever seen that one where they interview her?
I haven't seen the interview.
Yeah, I think they might mention that she's in California. It's good. She kind of looks like she's in her 40s at the time, and she looks kind of like one of the Edies from Grey Gardens, like sort of a kung fu version. She's got like a leopard print coat on. She definitely comes across as very eccentric, and the interviewer asks her if she would ever consider going back into films again, and she says yes, but don't make me play mama. I want to fight.
So we're going to focus on her films from the late 70s, which at that time were among the most awesome films coming out of Taiwan.
In our very subjective opinion. Yes. A lot of people might not think these are the best Polly Shane Kwan films, but, well, they're wrong, actually.
Yeah. Don't listen to them. Listen to us.
Yeah. She ended up making some... One of the things that's really great about Polly Shane Kwan is that she went on this... what many might see as being sort of a downward career trajectory from the time of working with King Hu to the late 70s when she made the movies we're talking about, which are some really deeply twisted, low-budget Taiwanese fantasy martial arts films. And a lot of people might look at that as being, you know, that she was sort of on a downward trajectory, like I said. But the thing about Polly is that she really seems to be enjoying herself immensely in these films, and it's sort of a testament to what's so likable about her, is that she really has a real sense of fun, and she just seems to really enjoy whatever she's doing.
Yeah, a lot of these films, I think, are originally intended to be comedies, and you can't really be miserable through a comedy.
Yeah.
You'll just throw everything off.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about first here, Tars?
First up, we'll discuss 1977's Fight for Survival, a.k.a. Fight for Shaolin Tamil Mystique, a.k.a. Lady Wu-Tang, which is the renamed title from the Wu-Tang Clan's VHS release of the film.
Yeah, and from that I could extrapolate the porn title easily, but I'll just leave it at that.
This is a film by Hao Chang, who, if you remember from our last shows, he directed Legend of Mother Goddess, as well as a film called Shaolin Invincibles, which has some kung fu gorillas.
Doesn't that one also have some guys with really long tongues, like their kung fu involves their them having these really long
sort of
fake tongues?
Chinese demon thing or something.
Oh, okay.
It's in a couple of films. I don't know exactly what it is.
But not in any other films that also have kung fu fighting gorillas in them.
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
There's about half a dozen of each. So Fight for Survival starts out with a bunch of famous martial arts stars raiding the Shaolin Temple, but it turns out they're actually crooks disguised as these famous stars, and they steal a magic book with multiple kung fu lessons in it, and then they split it up between them, and then they go their separate ways. Then we join our hero Polly, who's a girl who wants to learn kung fu. She gets basically bamboozled by some of the lower Shaolin monks for a couple of years until an eccentric sifu guy decides to take her under his wing and teach her kung fu. At this point, there's drama about the missing kung fu books, and so Polly must eventually track down these books and the people who own them.
Well, I think the thing, it isn't part of her training, the fact that she, each of the books teaches a different style, and she has to learn each style.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's, I think there's 7 books, and there's 7 robbers, and each of them, they split up, and each of them takes a volume, and so, but, and each learns the style. So she has to learn all of the fighting styles so that she can combat all of these people, and one of the fighting styles being the one that makes, allows her to stretch like Plastic Man.
The guys who have the books, since they study the one style instead of all the styles, they become living examples of the one style. So you have the long leg guy, the guy with the long arms, you have the guy who's walking backwards.
The walking backwards guy. And the long legs and the long arms are, of course, accomplished by the most high-tech means possible, basically by stilts and by gloves on the end of sticks under extra long sleeves.
Yes.
So.
And there's also positive and negative kung fus, which makes you male or female. So the male thief, he stole one of them, basically spends most of the film in drag. And as Polly starts learning positive kung fu, she starts growing a mustache as well and must learn the negative kung fu in order to become a girl again.
Yes, this is an important question with each of these films we're talking about, is it's a, you know, boy or girl. Is Polly a boy? Or no, it's not boy or girl. Is Polly a boy? Is she a girl masquerading as a boy? Or is she just a girl? This is the one film where she is a girl, but everybody seems to think she's a boy anyway, and then she actually starts to physically transform into a boy as the movie goes on. She gets this kind of a Robert Goulet mustache at one point. So that adds some urgency to her quest, because the one volume that can undo this happens to be the one volume that her sifu has not memorized. So she has to actually find the volume and to reverse her sex change that's going on.
By the end of the film, the actual actors who played the martial arts stars who were impersonated by the thieves return to the temple to trash it up. And so Polly has to come back and then fight all of them as well.
And then they do something at the end. I haven't watched this movie in a while, but there was something that the masters do at the end, which I described in my review as being a kung fu conga line. Like, they all kind of put their hands on each of their shoulders in the train, and they're kind of, they don't really show it very clearly, because I think it probably, the effect probably looked so bad that they didn't really want to show it in one long shot, but I think they're kind of, aren't they kind of flying through the air with their hands on each other's shoulder, like doing the bunny hop?
They did like weird matrix array type moves in some of these films. I think it's one of their array stances. So they combine all their powers together.
It was very weird.
Yes.
It was one of the many weird things in this very weird but very enjoyable movie.
So Fight for Survival is probably the title that's easily found under, or most easily found under. So we recommend you check that one out.
Definitely. And next up is Zodiac Fighters, which is also directed by Hao Chang. And Tars, do you want to take that one?
Yes, you might also find it under the title Dragon Zombies Return, which makes no sense because there are no zombies in the film, and nobody returns, really.
No, not really.
So Polly in this one is immediately stated to be a girl, so you know that is out of the way. She's a professional mourner who goes to where there's, I guess, a place where people go to die, and she mourns along with the family members by the dying person for money. Eventually, she gets mixed up. She finds a treasure next to a skeleton, and she goes to bury the skeleton before she grabs the treasure, and it turns out it was all a huge trick. If you bury the skeleton before you touch the treasure, you get the actual real treasure, but if you didn't, it was a trap.
Uh-huh.
And the treasure is the Heartbreak Sword and a message to go visit the Heartbreak Girl and basically tell her the guy who owned the sword died in misery because she was with him. The Heartbreak Girl actually guards a cave which has 12 caves in it for each of the different Chinese zodiac animals. And in each of those different caves, you can learn a different type of, different style of kung fu based on the different animals, such as dog style or snake style or dragon. All of the caves, except for the dragon caves, have been broken into already and defaced. Polly agrees to learn the dragon style kung fu because she wants to help the Heartbreak Girl get back at the man who killed her family and took over her land, whose name is Tiger Shark. Before her, or just as her training ends, five guys called the Five Elements, each having a different primary color outfit, barge in and cause Heartbreak Girl to suicide. So Polly now has to go track down the other animals and get them all to team up to take down the Five Elements and Tiger Shark.
The highlight of the movie being basically once all the animals get together, and which are basically played by, well, which are literally played by actors in funny animal costumes, basically. I can't remember all of them. I remember the main one I remember is the woman in the kind of ratty looking bunny suit.
Yeah, who eats a carrot or plays a carrot instrument or something.
Oh, like yeah, that. There's some kind of a carrot themed.
Yeah, there's a steak lady. There's a tiger guy who actually has the most uninteresting costume.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dog guy who at one point pees on one of the other guys, so that's kung fu power of dog pee.
It's not a kung fu comedy if someone doesn't pee on someone else.
There's bowls.
It's the peach kid rule.
Yeah, bowls and all the other animals. Consult your local Chinese restaurant menu or table mat for...
And then at the end, the bad guy is revealed to be Lo Li. And is Lo Li in Fight for Survival as well? He's in...
I'm not sure. He probably is.
He's in...
A ton of people.
Yeah, he's in Little Hero. He's in a few... I mean, he did a lot of these Taiwanese movies. But as most of you probably know, Lo Li was the star of King Boxer, which is better known here in the States as Five Fingers of Death, which was one of the first kung fu films to be a big theatrical hit in the United States. And you would think that that would lead to him having a career as a hero in kung fu films, but as Keith from Teleport City likes to say, Lo Li then fell down the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way and basically somehow ended up being a bad guy in just a lot of Shaw Brothers films, but he also did a lot of Taiwanese films, and almost always as the bad guy. So he shows up in this, and he makes quite an impression. There's a scene I think I talked about in one of the earlier episodes where the big finale is on the beach, and he shows up being carried in a big old palanquin that launches these sharks. They kind of look like stuffed novelty sharks,
yeah,
that you'd get at,
big rubber sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like something you'd get at the boardwalk, you know, if you did the ring toss or something, you'd get one of these sharks. But he launches them at the animal fighters, and as I recall, there were also, aren't there like motorcycle sound effects that the sharks make? There was some really weird.
Yeah, they have like an engine sound as they're running down.
Yeah, they're like vroom vroom, yeah. And the bunny lady jumps on one of the sharks and rides the stuffed shark. It's pretty, words can't really do it justice. And also he has his minions, which are guys with big lobster claws on their hands. And
yeah. So unfortunately not everyone is dressed up as an animal, only certain minions.
Yeah. Yeah.
They skipped on the budget at the end.
Yeah, those were like, yeah, they had the star minions, and then they had the background minions that didn't get to wear the claws. I actually watched this movie a long time ago, so I didn't remember all of the stuff that Tarz was talking about the beginning. I mean, that last 15 minutes is indelibly burned into my brain, but as all of the things that build up to that, why what happened, I didn't remember, but it sounds from what you're saying, Tarz, that there was actually a plot to this movie that made sense and somewhat and moved in a linear fashion, so.
Yeah, it was typically complex, like a lot of these are, but not so complex when there's, you know, backgrounds for 500 people, but it was more than just something you could break down into two sentences.
Right, it wasn't like like one of the Choi Yen Wuja movies, but still enough complex rivalries and everything. And also in this movie, as I recall, the same with Fight for Survival, is I think a lot of these movies aren't really, you might have gathered this already, they're not really for kung fu purists. Like, I've heard people complain that there's not enough fighting in these movies, and there is a lot of just kind of goofy business that goes on. And Polly Shang Kwan, being someone who proved herself as being a very physically capable performer and someone who had actual martial arts skills, it's not as much of a showcase for her abilities. It seems like it's, you know, there are some good fight sequences, but when she's fighting with, you know, stuffed sharks and lobster men and stuff, it's not, you know, it's not as much of a ideal showcase for her abilities. It seems like more of a chance for her to have fun and us to have fun with her, but you kind of have to put your martial arts purist sensibilities.
Yeah, we'll get letters from the dog style martial arts purists who will complain about how the dog king scene was done inaccurately and
yeah,
with the wrong stance.
The next up is Little Hero from 1978, and this is sort of, if you looked at these three films as a trilogy, this would definitely be the culminating one. This is where all of the weirdness kind of reaches a volcanic peak. This one was directed by Chan Hung Man. I don't know much about him as far as credits. He seems to have worked more as an editor. The basic plot of the film is kind of a classic kung fu movie plot. Basically, you have like the super weapon that gets stolen by an evil clan, and then the daughter of a kung fu master is kidnapped. I think this clan kidnaps the daughter so in order to get their hands on this powerful weapon called the Phoenix Sword, which is owned by the kung fu master, and the master's disciples band together to free the daughter, Polly being one of those people. Probably one of the most colorful things about this movie is the evil gang, which is called the Devil's Gang, which is quite a rogues gallery of weird kung fu villains. The leader is named Gold Mask, who is again played by Lo Lee, and he has a sideman called Silver Mask. They each wear, as you might guess, Gold Mask wears a gold mask, Silver Mask a silver mask. But as a bonus, each of them uses this giant fake condor wings that they wear, and they can actually kind of hang glide around. So there's lots of
something from the cartoon Silverhawks.
Yeah, it kind of does look like that. And then they have a whole host of bizarre minions. There's a midget kung fu guy called Vampire. There's a whip-wielding dominatrix lady. There's the guy with elephant ears. Help me out if I'm missing anybody, Tarza. There's a guy who burrows underground, kind of like the dwarf sorcerer. A bear guy. And then there's a bunch of guys who are called the Tiger Guards, who wear fuzzy tiger-striped headpieces.
So it's different from the normal where tiger striped underwear looking like cavemen.
Right, exactly, yeah. They actually have the little cute little ears going on too. And the gang of Master Chen, who are the heroes, would in any other circumstances look pretty weird too, but when you put them next to the Devil's Gang, they really look pretty normal. But there is a guy who wears a spiked football helmet, which is interesting because I think this is supposed to take place in like the, you know, 17th century or something like that. But he has a football helmet. So there's all kinds of crazy stuff goes on in this movie. There's a part where Polly has to fight people who are inside these things that look like... I always called them pinballs in my reviews, but they have holes in them, so they look kind of like bowling balls a little bit.
Yeah, bowling balls or Death Stars or something.
Yeah, they're like personal Death Stars. And so she has to fight those. Once again, probably not the best showcase for pure martial arts, you know...
He was dragging train stands
to
fight people in the hall.
Right, exactly. And I think there's some giant mouse traps that are employed. It's very cartoonish, I think would be the right word to describe the action in this. And then definitely the high point, again, as with Zodiac Fighters, the finale of the movie is just really incredible. I think anybody who has seen this movie, this is the part that really sticks with them, and that's the part where once again there's a climax on the beach, and this takes place after Polly beats, I think, Silvermask, takes the wings herself, and there's an aerial chase where she chases Goldmask. She's flying around. In this movie, she is a boy, actually.
Yes.
Yes, she is. She is not a girl masquerading as a boy. She is a boy, even though the other thing that's great about these movies is Polly Shang-Kwan does not look like a boy. And they always put her in like little short skirts and stuff. She's wearing kind of a little short toga in this. She has full makeup on, eyeliner. But this is sort of a tradition of wuxia films and martial arts films. And especially in the 60s, you had a lot of... It was very common to find the male heroes of wuxia and martial arts films being played by women. So this is a holdover from that, but it's pretty ridiculous, you know. And the only way you know that she is supposed to be a man is because everybody refers to her as young man.
Yeah.
Well, young man or lad. She gets called lad a lot, or at least in the terrible English dubs.
Yeah, I was waiting for the big reveal at the end, but that never happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In a lot of these films, it's... Yeah, I think some of the Pearl Ling Chung movies, there's the same thing, but then in the end, she reveals herself that all along she was a girl masquerading as a boy, and it's like, who would have known? So anyway, Polly the boy flies away after Gold Mask, and then the chase leads to the beach. Then at the beach, all of a sudden, and I don't think there's any reason for this happening, I don't think it's conjured, you know, I don't think any kind of spell is cast, but all of a sudden there are these giant rubber octopuses that to me look very much like the lead character in the video game Qbert, and they're amazing. I mean, and she fights these big giant octopuses, and that's pretty, you know, that's a real nail biter. You don't know how that's gonna work out, but it looks like maybe she's gonna get the upper hand. And then the octopuses start, I guess, birthing baby octopuses at her. And so there's like little... They're just like spurting out little baby octopuses at her, and she's kind of like, you know, fending those off. And that's kind of an interesting... I think that introduces sort of an interesting evolutionary concept to the idea of birth as a defense, you know, like not just procreation, but you have babies, you know, to use them as projectiles against your enemies.
Yes.
Maybe an ability that humans once had that we've lost. Sadly. So, yeah.
I wonder why that would have died out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So then, eventually, she, of course, defeats the octopi, but that, yeah, there's not much to be said about that sequence. You can only describe it as best you can, but it really needs to be seen to be believed. I mean, you always hear about, this Kung Fu movie was so weird, and there are a lot of weird ones, but I think this is... I mean, wouldn't you say this is one of the weirder things?
Top 10 list for sure.
Top 10 list of weirdest moments in Kung Fu, and that there is quite a lot of competition. I think it's up there with the watermelon monster from which was that Taoism drunkard that's in. It's one of the drunkard.
Yeah, it has two or three titles.
Yeah, but we'll get complaints about that too for not knowing which movie that was. So that's Little Hero.
And that's it for all the Polly Shang-Kwan discussion for now. Tune in next time for another episode of The Infernal Brains.
Thank you.